Welcome to Amandla Radio here at CQUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. This week we have an interview with Professor Ibrahim Harvey. He's a political writer and commentator who's published in the Globe and the Mail and Guardian. He's also a broadcaster on TV and radio, formerly a very active trade unionist with COSATU and a sociologist at the Wits University. He is introduced to us by Raj Kanji, our friend in Sackville, New Brunswick. And Raj is going to lead the interview basically around the issues that are brought up in Professor Harvey's book, The Great Pretenders, Race and Class Under ANC Rule. It's a real critique of the ANC and what they have done with all the policy decisions they've made to weaken the situation of... I want to welcome Dr. Ibrahim Harvey of South Africa, a longtime activist, militant, art scholar around South African issues. And I'm going to pass it to... Good morning to you, Professor Harvey.
Good morning. Good morning to you. Thanks.
And good morning, Raj. Ibrahim is in South Africa. It's after 3 there, and Raj is in New Brunswick. It's after 10 there, and I'm in Montreal. So good morning and good evening to all our listeners. Raj, please help us get into this subject, because it really is an important one.
Okay. Yeah. So South Africa has been in crisis for the longest while, and you know, the current inflation, which is running rampant, clearly cuts, in real terms, the wages of the working people. And COVID, the recent COVID crisis, which is ongoing, has shown up and exposed all the problems of overcrowding, the inadequate health services, the housing, grossly inadequate social welfare system. The transport services were grossly inadequate. The unemployment is running between 30% and 40%. Ibrahim, if you can help us explain why this is so, and you know, why is this crisis ongoing?
Yeah. Well, one has to obviously trace the origins of this particular crisis in South Africa, which in fact, you know, to all intents and purposes of what the ANC had intended with their rule, beginning with the watershed elections of 1994, you know, it has turned out nothing less than disastrous. And I think a reliable indicator of the extent of the magnitude of the crisis. I virtually get interviewed on TV or radio every day. For the past weeks or months, it's just nonstop. You know, now and then before I would be interviewed, you know, once a month it's just, and I'm struggling to cope with the request for interview, which is growing, you know. And it's a multifaceted crisis. It was there from the beginning. You'll see, which is what I trace in the book, you know. I go back to the origins of the ANC, but, you know, in the contemporary period when it took office in 1994. And in the book, I explain that I am not surprised. If you are familiar with the analysis of the left, the so-called independent left, then you will know from the time Mandela was released throughout this negotiations period, you know, the analysis, the critical analysis was that we likely, most likely end up where we are today. But I don't even think the most pessimistic forecasts of what a future South Africa would look like under ANC rule could have envisaged the depth of the decay, degeneration, and the stark betrayal of the ANC in office, in power. Well, you know, qualified power, you know, largely political, and except for the creation of a tiny black elite and more numerous black middle class, which is also a very interesting thing, because what the South African media did, because it was white controlled to a large extent, and there's been shifts and changes, but it celebrated the emergence of a black middle class in particular. But what it didn't do was to trace the decline of that middle class, roughly coinciding with the mortgage crisis in the United States, 2008-09. It's been nonstop. COVID aggravated it much more, and then the Russian invasion of Ukraine. So you don't find that much in the media, but I can tell you, and there are two indicators of the dispossession or loss of prestige and status of the middle class, which is the repossession of houses and cars. I think it's at an all-time high now. The white working class is more, middle class is more resourceful for historical reasons. So they have weathered the crisis much better than has the black middle class. And I think many of them have found their ways back to the townships where they come from and out of the expensive white suburbia. That has been the trend over the past, I reckon, more than a decade. And you will not hear much of it in the media. But I want to get closer to, I think to some extent I've answered your question, but you know, the ANC, you must remember, the ANC made a $850 million loan in already 1993 from the World Bank. Our President Ramaphosa was already in 1992 making statements about, you know, populist left, you know, policies would be counterproductive in South Africa, and so on. And if you look at his background and, you know, relationship with what is called white monopoly capital, that is why often, you know, Cyril is associated with that clique, because indeed, you know, there's a long history there. But, you know, where we began to get very concerned with a distinct neoliberal turn was when the RDP office unceremoniously shut down in April 1996. And 2 months later was replaced by, you know, distinctly neoliberal gay policy. And, you know, when I interviewed Mbeki, Trevor Manuel, these people, you know, for the books that I've written before, they would always attempt to say, no, GAY did not replace the RDP. GAY was an extension of the RDP in other terms. And yet, you know, if you're familiar with the analysis that has been made of the RDP, of GAY emergence,
just to interrupt, just to let the listeners understand, the RDP is Reconstruction and Development Program, and the GAY was the
Growth, Employment, and Redistribution Strategy.
Yeah.
Yeah, the RDP was virtually the ANC's election manifesto. BOSATU gave birth to the RDP in 1993, and it became virtually the election manifesto of the ANC.
And just to emphasize that pressure came from the unions and not from the ANC in itself, right? That the
was pushed by COSATU in particular, because COSATU authored the RDP largely. They put from other civil society organizations, but it was largely and fundamentally driven by COSATU. That was during the time when, you know, COSATU was not the COSATU that it is today.
Right.
COSATU was, in fact, arguably the most militant and fastest growing trade union federation in the world at one stage. Yes, that was the statue of COSATU.
Right.
You know, what a terrible thing has happened to it.
So would you say that it was at that point that once the RDP was shut down and introducing GAY, that the dismantling of COSATU began then?
Well, the dismantling of COSATU, I'm not sure on how you would like to define that dismantling, but at a programmatic policy level, indeed, those are the origins of a more distinct neoliberalism in post-apartheid South Africa under ANC rule. Don't also forget that 2 months after the ANC took office, you can look at the Water Services Act. The Water Services Act, 2 months after the ANC took, already makes provision for the commercialization, corporatization, and commodification, the triple C, which is my area of work and study. Of water. We had that already. And you know what's very interesting when you talk about water? Britain banned prepaid water meters at one stage. It was banned in Britain. Mbeki and these people spent most of their time in Britain, London in particular. And they knew that it was banned, and they shoved prepaid water meters down the throats of the Soweto people, a lot of different African townships. So-called colored Indian townships too, but mainly the African townships. In Piri, it's an area of Soweto, they had to bring in the army to complete the installation of prepaid water meters. The people had ripped the meters out of the ground. In 2003, this is when this happened.
And so what happened when this happens, the commercialization, the profits from that are going to international companies or?
Yeah, no, let me explain to you something. Yeah. In 2002, Municipal Systems Act and Municipal Structures Act kicks in. And so what it did was institutionally now with local government. That's why it's called the Municipal Systems Act. You institutionalize. Let me give you an example. In the city of Johannesburg, what the ANC did, which the Nationalist Party never ever did or envisaged doing, just like they never ever allowed, Trevor Manuel and the Nationalist Party, the ANC allowed, some big companies to repatriate their profits, open up offices, go off. Offshore to London, New York, and other places. Nationalist Party never did that. They also never, prepaid meters have been around for a long time. They never imposed it. They had water, sanitation, electoral streets as public goods, except that the black people were not, were deprived these things. But what the Municipal Systems Act is, it's institutionalized, and out of that, that's why. In Joburg, they shut down the water and sanitation department in the Joburg municipality. And in its place, because it now allowed for the Municipal Systems Act, allowed for the commercialization and corporatization of water, Joburg Water was formed. Pick It Up was formed. City Power, the water utility, was formed. You see, by then you must remember that ANC people were visiting New York. They were visiting London. The World Bank had been taking local officials out of the country and exposing them to this thinking. And I remember, you know, I wrote the authorized biography of the former president, Kgalema Motlanthe. And he said to me, Ibrahim, what must we do? They bring consultants and the consultants mislead people. And, you know, and what do the ANC officials know? I mean, the World Bank officials would run rings around them, you know. So and basically, it appears it is what happened. But it was with the go-ahead of the top leadership of the ANC, you know, for that to have happened. With their blessings. And so we've had what you call the water warriors in Soweto and in all townships in South Africa. You can see what is happening now. It's not just a huge electricity crisis. Water has never been as bad as it is today. Around the country, it is a total mess. And, you know, it's just amazing. You know, when you look at what Afrikaner rule, Nationalist Party did for the Afrikaner working class from 1948, you cannot even begin to compare. You cannot even begin. You know, the Nationalist Party fundamentally changed the conditions of the Afrikaner working class in particular. They had amongst the highest standards of living in the world of a working class. And the very opposite prevails today under ANC rule. The townships have never been, it's falling apart completely. Sewerage running down the streets, townships, little children falling into pit latrines and dying, several of them over the past 2-3 years. You know, the list of you see, one must not use terms like betrayal, treachery, you know, glibly, but it's nothing less than that to my mind. This is what has happened, you know. And the betrayal, more starkly, you know, the ANC had a racialist mantra which said blacks in general and Africans in particular. It was the narrative edge of this emergent black Africanish majoritarian chauvinism, I have called, from the year 1999 when the ANC lost Cape Town again. I was asked to do a piece. And this is it. You know, when people tell me today, yeah, what is happening to the colored people, the Indian people, you don't talk a lot about us. You talk about the African people. This is my answer to them. You know, to some extent, right, but the African people really are still the worst off. What is happening in the so-called Indian and colored townships, you cannot compare it. It's a total unmitigated mess. It's the worst infrastructural crisis in the entire history of Johannesburg since it was formed, not in 1886, many people think, but in 1887. Biggest crisis, the roads of Joburg. I mean, this is the most powerful city supposed to be in Africa. It's never been as bad. The potholes have turned into craters. You can't even manage to negotiate to avoid hitting potholes. You can't. It's just a mess. I mean, and so, you know, numerous crises have simultaneously converged during this moment. And, you know, you see it all over the country. I am extremely worried about the future of South Africa, I must tell you. I don't think even the most pessimistic forecast during the anti-apartheid struggle of a future ANC, future South Africa under ANC rule, could have envisaged what is happening today. Nobody could have. And I'm familiar with the literature, the people who foreseen doom and gloom if the ANC came to power, the left and the white right. I mean, it's just, it's terrible. It's the worst situation ever. And if you look at the global situation, you're talking of neoliberalism. I mean, the worst crisis in global capitalism in well over a century, I believe. And coming in the wake of COVID and this Russian invasion, I think globally for the working class, right now is the worst moment in well over a century, I would argue. And go on.
No, so, and what's the response of the working class, namely Safatu?
Yeah, it's been a stunted response, and primarily because what the ANC has done very deliberately and smartly. What the ANC did from 1994, that is how Marcel Golding, Johnny Copeland, and many other unions were deployed, they like using this term in South Africa, deployed from COSATU, from the trade unions to parliament, and they became members of parliament. Right now, till today, you'll see what the ANC does. It takes certain members of the trade union and puts it into the NEC of the ANC, and it captures it. And you imagine the amounts of pressure that they under and sustained pressure. Let me tell you, COSATU, the National Union of Mine Workers, that was once so powerful, where Ramaphosa comes from, I have heard it from the top already, how concerted pressures they've been under from 1994 to toe the line. And so they've put certain people, you know, but today things are changing. You can see the COSATU's Congress a few weeks back. I think the gloves are off. Well, you know, it appears that if you follow that Congress, how they booed Gwede Mantashe and did not allow him to speak on two consecutive days, he had to leave there with his tail between his legs.
And Gwede Mantashe is the ANC...
He's the ANC chairperson. Yeah, he's the ANC chairperson and Minister of Mineral and Energy Resources. General Secretary of the ANC and former General Secretary of the National Union of Mine Workers.
Now, given that what COSATU had, you know, being co-opted by the government, that led to expulsion of NUMSA.
No,
that was resistance against that co-optation, right?
No. You're putting it a bit confusingly. Let me attempt to give you some perspective on what you are saying. It's not a straightforward thing. Those measures, which were consciously and deliberately taken to co-opt COSATU from 1994, when several unionists were deployed to parliament, was a very conscious, concerted. It was born out of the earlier SACTU relationship between the ANC, SACP, and the ANC, and, you know, COSATU now taking the place of SACTU and so on. But you see, there's been a lot of, I mean, you know, I once had a column with the Mail and Guardian, and I remember, in fact, all that I said would happen. I've been vindicated if you look at what has happened to this ANC lands by those columns. But there are lots of tensions, you know. So what you're saying, it didn't neatly lead to or directly lead to the expulsion of Vavi, the former Secretary General of the of COSATU, and to the biggest affiliate of COSATU, NUMSA, when NUMSA was expelled. I mean, where on earth have you ever heard, probably in the world, where a major trade union federation expels its biggest affiliate? It's unheard of. So with one fell swoop, they expelled over 300,000 workers from NUMSA. But it was not, you know, I was interviewed on radio this morning, twice this morning, and I had to draw people's attention to this, you know, that in fact, and I don't want to cite, even now I can't do it. On radio and TV, I've refused to mention people's names. All I can tell you is that the expulsion of NUMSA and Zwelinzima Vavi was not directly by COSATU itself. No, it was taken to COSATU, and it got COSATU to adopt that resolution. Forces in the ANC, forces outside of COSATU. I don't want to mention names, but very reliable people who in fact were victims of that purge. Who have said that it came less from COSATU, it came from more, you know, other forces, you know, in the ANC government and other parties and so on.
So would you say that NUMSA
at that
was...
time,
sorry.
At that time, Zuma was in office. You must remember, Zuma was in office when they were kicked out. Okay. And so there's been many speculations that, for example, speculations that Bladen Zimande, the leader of the SACP, and Zuma in particular, this is what he said, I've heard reliably, drove that expulsion, and that it was not a genuine worker-based delegate decision of COSATU organically, but as a result of forces at play. Vavi had become a, you know, a big problem for the ANC elite. NUMSA had now got tired of being convenient electoral cannon fodder for the ANC. It was beginning to raise its voice in COSATU, and the ANC never took kindly. And when you looked again, NUMSA was expelled and Wavi was expelled, I think 2015. So, but remember, by the time those expulsions takes place, the union movement, like the union movement globally, has been on the decline.
Yes.
The union movement globally has been on the decline for at least 3-4 decades, coinciding with, you know, massive technological changes at the point of production, et cetera. But because of the deep history in which race and class were linked inextricably in South African history, you've had the persistence of huge struggles by COSATU, because they're dealing with that massive socioeconomic legacy from the apartheid period, which in fact, ironically, got much worse. Much, much worse.
Right.
If you go to the ANC's National Democratic Revolution of the ANC, go through their documents. And while they stress that this struggle is a political struggle against racism, they often speak about socio-economic issues.
Right.
I don't want to go into that now, but the whole thing about, which is where the left differed with the ANC, SACP, was, you know, what would you could call a permanent revolutionary position advocated by Leon Trotsky, which would link the race to the class struggle inextricably, bound together, cheek by jowl. And it is why we're in this biggest crisis ever. It is why the ANC is in this mess. It is why the black townships are in the worst infrastructural crisis you get. It is why Joburg is falling apart. These are the results of the ANC, you know, going hook, line, and sinker for a neoliberal policy regime in every domain. What you've had with these grants, I mean, can you imagine 17, 18 million people relying on grants, without which the ANC knows what it's doing? Because once you take away those grants, you're really going to be looking at fostering, you know, a massive revolutionary explosion. And they knew this. And that's why, at great cost to the fiscus, and they probably can ill afford from that, especially conservative neoliberal a macroeconomic policy regime, to continue with this, and they have, because to stop those grants, you know, would really be opening up the taps of, if you think what has happened has been militant, it's going to be much, much worse if those grants have to stop. And Moletsi Mbeki, Thabo's brother, is the first one to have pointed this out. He has a book, The Architects of Poverty, in which he goes into detail to show how, and indeed it's true, especially in the rural areas, people were told to vote ANC, otherwise they lose their pensions, you see, and their grants and the rest of it, when it's in fact an absolute lie. Those are legislative, you know, statutory decisions which are not affected by, you know, political sentiment or loyalty. But he was the first one, you know, to... And indeed, this is what has happened, you know. I think had that not been the case, honestly, it's possible even that the ANC may have been out of office today, was it not for that very extensive, now 17, 18 million people on these grants, you know. And as you know, however, what is a characteristic hallmark of neoliberalism is minimalism. That's why you see even this stress relief grant of 350. What the hell do you do with 350? If you look at the South African cost of living, I mean, but this is the dominant theme of neoliberalism. Wherever you have a social or welfare initiatives or policies, it's always on the barest minimalism. And that applies completely in the South African context, you know, which is what has taken down the standards of living further.
You're listening to an interview with Professor Ibrahim Harvey of South Africa. You're on the Mandla Radio here in Montreal, CQT 90.3.
Right. Just to put that in context, that 350 rands is equivalent to about 35 Canadian dollars.
Yeah, probably.
And the cost of petrol or gas, what you call here, is even higher in South Africa than what they would pay in
yeah,
in
no,
North
it's
America.
it's terrible.
So, So coming back to this, you know, the COSATU had formed a tripartite alliance with the African National Congress and the South African Communist Party. What do you see with that alliance now, given all these crises and that worker demands that, you know, the leadership in COSATU and the South African Federation of the Trade Unions, which is the breakaway here?
I have a column with News 24, and so I write about these issues often, and I'm interviewed over it, you know. And sometimes I get to a stage where I'm just, my head is so full of all these things that it can disorientate you. But I think, however, what happened at the COSATU Congress might be a point of departure. We have to see how things turn out. I think they will still vote for Ramaphosa in the electoral conference of the ANC in 2-3 months' time. You know, it's what happens thereafter in the lead up to the 2024 election, I think, that is of pivotal importance. They have never been more militant, I must tell you, at the COSATU Congress. And on the first day for that to have happened, that drama is unprecedented. It's never before at the COSATU. First day, look what they did to Mantashe, who is chairperson of the ANC. So a hell of a slap in the face. And you can see even who's supposed to be a big loyal supporter of Ramaphosa, Lossi, the president of COSATU, sounding ever more militant because she's under massive pressure from the rank and file of COSATU. That's pushed leftward increasingly, and other officials too. It is what happens now to COSATU now. This is they'll probably be involved in campaigning for the ANC the next 2-3 months. I mean, for Ramaphosa, sorry, and then thereafter 2024. Whether they'll support, it's a big question. And if you listen to people at the Congress, they're going to support Ramaphosa in now for the election. But what happens in 2024, whether the ANC would make the necessary changes, shifts, or please COSATU, you know, so that it, you know, again, campaigns for an ANC win in 2024, we can't say. But for Ramaphosa's re-election in December, unless he's charged by the NPA, or unless the parliamentary panel who's investigating what happened on the Palafala farm finds that he has a prima facie case to answer, then the NPA will be under pressure to charge him, and then he can't stand in the election at all in terms of the ANC step-aside rule. He has to step aside. The rest of the other faction, there'll be a hell to play, a real war in the ANC if the NPA charges him. But it's precisely why the NPA knows what's at stake. That's why till now, what Fraser's charges, the former spy boss, against him is very, very serious stuff. You know, with many people, you'd have thought that, you know, and what has not helped Ramaphosa much is how he's treated the media and parliament, you know, to questions about, you know, he takes the legalistic recourse of let the law take its course. He doesn't want to answer anything. And I think it's because he knows that in the final analysis, there's 8 regions that supports him for re-election. So although the KZN is the biggest region, they'll be trounced by the convergence and a combination of the votes from the other regions, the other 6 regions. I think he knows that he's virtually reassured of a second term, despite the biggest blunder of his political. I know him from 1982 when NUM was formed. I was introduced to him by Pirush Okame, the general secretary of KUSA, to which NUM was affiliated. And biggest mistake, biggest miscalculation. How could he ever do it? It's just, it's incredible what happened on his farm. And, you know, it's just shocking. And not very good arguments that is put up, what he did, who he reported to. I think the panel in parliament is going to dig into this, and I'm telling you, he's going to have a very hard time. The big thing is that if parliament decides he's got a prima facie case to answer, then the pressure for the NPA to lay charges is going to be enormous.
So the NPA is the National Prosecuting
Authority. Many things can still happen. People forget. Many things could still happen. Much depends on what the parliamentary panel, independent panel, comes up with. So, because we come up with a prima facie case for to answer. Oh, then do the Integrity Commission of the ANC would have to take cognizance of that, the NPA. And if charges are laid, oh, we're in very big trouble, because I've argued consistently, no matter what neoliberalism, what failures, and you know, what he's done, you know, all his weakness and failures, I really believe that if somebody else comes in from the so-called radical economic transformation faction, Zuma, Ace Magashule, even Zweli Mkhize, you know, or Lindiwe Sisulu, I think we're going to really, if you think that that lot has had enough of corruption and they genuinely turning a new leaf, and you're mistaken. That's the nature of the state. And a lot of these people are desperate for work because no one has unpacked that. Why is it that people are this fighting? I mean, how are they killing each other in the townships? You know why? That's why. Here's why. If you take the so-called African people, the so-called African people have been historically right at the bottom of the socioeconomic ladder, right at the bottom. That has worsened, in fact, in post-apartheid. A lot of these ANC councillors, the first job they've ever had in their whole lives is the council jobs. They had no qualifications, no experience, no skills, nothing. So once you lose that councillor, what you in the doldrums, what can you do? It's terrible, and it's the worst unemployment crisis in the history of this country. I argue, not just in post-apartheid South Africa, arguably in the history of the country.
So what's the alternative political organization for the working class? For like, if COSATU has to break away, right? Well, and for that matter, like and SAFTU.
Yeah. No, you see what this is. What is going to likely happen? You see what you need now. You don't need COSATU right now to break away from the ANC. You need to only have COSATU breaking away from the ANC to the extent that it has reunited with SAFTU. SAFTU comes from COSATU. They were expelled.
Right.
This is it. Now, SAFTU started the Socialist Workers' Revolutionary Party. Mari Bund, they never even participated in last year's elections. Irvin Jim, I believe, has been responsible for the biggest problems there. I don't want to go into that now. And the relationship between him and Zweli Mzima Vavi is just terrible, and what's happened, and it's affected COSATU and even the formation and the existence of the Socialist Workers' Revolutionary Party. But the requirement, you see, ultimately, I was asked this question on radio this morning. Ultimately, you need a party of the working class, but not a party that's going to shun parliamentarism. I mean, like the left would want to say, you know, parliament is a bourgeois thing, et cetera. You're going to have parliamentary politics and elections for the next 10, 20, 50, 40 years. Let me tell you, if you look at the global situation in South Africa, that's it. There's no one else. They're too weak, the so-called independent left, to ever attempt anything in this country. Completely. Forget about it. So you're sitting with parliamentary electoral politics for the next 10, 15, 20, 50 years, even I'd go, really. That is how deep the current crisis, which envelops the left also, is. But COSATU is not stupid also. COSATU, there are elements in COSATU that's once now NUMSA back. They want Vavi back. That's why Vavi was at the COSATU Congress. He was there. He was invited there. It was very significant that he was there. So what I'm hoping happens is that SAFTU and COSATU gets back together again. But NUMSA has said they don't want to touch COSATU again. I think NUMSA still struggles with coming to terms how they were scandalously expelled. And Irvin Jim has been, I've seen him quoted that it's not true that NUMSA wants to go back to COSATU. They finish with COSATU, etc. So, you know, but if you speak to Vavi and other affiliates, they'd say they want to reunite with COSATU. That is the key question of today. That is the key question of the working, organized working class, inside and outside the trade unions, because there's nothing happening in the townships except these sporadic, spontaneous township protests, which broke out in June 2004 in unstoppable avalanche. It has never stopped. The unions also need to rekindle the links and reestablish the links between the factory floor and community struggles and township, which was there in the 1980s, in the 1980s. Right. You don't have that. So the black working class goes home after work to the townships where all this hell is breaking loose. I mean, it's just terrible what's happening. And they have an organized base in the factory floor in Kosatu that they need to extend consciously and structurally into the townships and link
up. Do you see that happening now? Or is that happening?
Well, I'm calling for it. When I'm interviewed, I raise these things, you know. Terry Bell was with me this morning. He was with the, you know, panel debate we had this morning, and he supported that. But, you know, the townships are in such a mess. You have to come to South Africa, believe me, and let me take you around. You will not believe it. You will absolutely never believe it. I mean, can you believe me saying that the townships were better off during the apartheid days? I mean, can you believe me saying that? I know the townships. I was there from 1972. We joined SASM, South African Student Movement. They were behind the 76 uprisings, not the ANC. And, you know, it's just a terrible situation in the townships. I mean, just to have to say that, it's just incredible, you know. The townships are in the far worse than they were during the dark nightmare. I mean, this is what's happened. But the Kosatu thing, you see, you have to look at NUMSA and the party that they formed there and what's happening there. It's another problem, the deep problem. And that is going to, unless those problems are ironed out, it's going to seriously hinder the emergence of a united left, you talk about United Front or a working class party or something. It's very serious issues between Bavi, Jim, and NUMSA and other affiliates of SAFTU, you see. And the what has not helped, in fact, it has opened the floodgates of hostility, is the NUMSA investment company. I mean, who could believe this? There's very serious allegations of corruption, a whole lot of things that went wrong in NUMSA's. They were the last union. They were reluctant to go the way of union investment companies, but eventually they got also carried away, you know, with that, and they formed, and there's so serious problems there. And this is the problem. The left at the moment, you know, it's a quite a gloomy situation. That is why, precisely why, what happened at the Kosatu Congress, there's a glimmer of hope perhaps out of that Congress, you know, but they need to now make more conscious strides towards talking to and hopefully uniting with SAFTU and Jim and others, making their peace with perhaps a merger, a reunification between SAFTU and including NUMSA and Kosatu is best as a first step, as a prerequisite to broader, larger, long-term working class unity.
But at the same time, you know, the workers do have a history and conscientization of when they, you know, they had accountability structures from the shop floor upwards and into the community, right? So unlike in other parts like of the world where the unions have become bureaucratized, they have no links with the civic organizations.
Yeah. Right?
And I think that in that sense, that's still a strength. And from what you're saying is that that can be rekindled
Well, let me tell you, that's easier said than done for several major reasons. As much as I would like to see that happen, the objective problems and crises which operate at the moment will most probably hinder the fruition and realization of that. Let me tell you, the fourth industrial revolution, when it really runs over this country, I believe that the powers that be, because of the massive negative impact of COVID and now the Russian invasion, have deliberately stalled the expression, the carrying out of the industrial at the technological level with AI and robotics and everything else. There's scary stuff. I had a discussion with a guy from the University of New York now with this recent book, and what he painted, the picture he painted was just, you can't believe what's that. So the unions have not even kept pace with this fourth industrial revolution. This is supposed to be up for discussions with management, you know, because sectors are going to be terribly affected once this thing really is unleashed in South Africa. I don't know what the situation with the unions abroad, but it's a serious problem. I did a piece in Business Day on this thing. You know, it was carried because people realize that it's a big gap in the discourses. Nobody from the unions are talking of fourth industrial revolution. I have not read any article by anyone in the trade union movement that deals with the fourth industrial, and it's coming on, and it's going to have a, it will make Vavi's jobless bloodbath look like a mild thing compared to what's coming. That's my sense of it. And I'm trying to say, so you have on the factory floor these massive problems combined with the worst socioeconomic crisis in the townships ever. Now caught between those two crises, oh man, it's going to be very, very, even to rekindle those links between the factory floor, which is at its weakest point now. Don't be misled by COSATU's militancy at the Congress. You know, the unions are seriously on the decline. The townships are in a total mess. You know, it's a very, it's a deplorable you won't blame people when they feel, and they do, many people very pessimistic about, they do, about the future of this country. And I mean, they talk about it all the time. And not just the so-called minorities of whites, Indians, and colors. It's as a broader sweep. People are leaving this country after the July riots of 2021. They're flooding into Cape Town, especially the so-called minorities who can afford it. Yes, there's been a massive flooding to Cape Town. They're running away from. So, you know, the country is really on tenterhooks. There are serious, serious problems confronting the future of South Africa.
But how does capital respond to that? Because at some point it will also affect their own profit making. You know, if there's such destruction of the infrastructure
Well, it's already happened. You must remember. I mean, I don't know if you're keeping abreast with. If I just take two stained out enterprises, I mean, you put the two together. Oh, it's so dreadfully bad you can't believe it. If you look at Transnet,
yeah,
you know, I mean, if you look at what has happened to the railway lines in this country, yeah. I don't know if you've been here. You wouldn't yes. be.
Actually, I could actually give an example. I was there in was it March, April, and
okay, we were last
driving
year.
To, you know. To the Northwest Province,
yeah.
And you know, we saw all the railway lines and stations all dismantled. So the farmers were using trucks, and we saw huge lineups where the trucks were going through from Botswana to Walvis Bay instead of going to Cape Town because of this huge
infrastructure crisis. It has never happened in the entire history of this country. You can go back to 1652 and Van Riebeck and trace South African history right from there. It is unprecedented what is happening today under ANC rule. It's shocking. I mean, you know, I live in a place called Constantia Kloof here in the West Rand. This was supposed to be a sort of middle-class area. Every street, the potholes, it's terrible. You know, these were the bit. You know, under Nationalist Party rule, let me tell you, the infrastructure in South Africa was, I mean, we had all this racism and the differences between the, but first class infrastructure, I mean, the robots work, you'll never find a pothole on the road. Yeah, it was just splendid. It's true. Nationalist Party rule, you know, Joburg
City. Make them look good now, yes, yeah.
Go to Joburg City now, you walk around in Joburg City at night at your own peril. Places like the CBD, Bramfontein, Bertrams, Yeovil, Berea. Oh, you're in trouble, my friend. Even during the day, forget about at night. It's bad. And whoever thought, you know, that this is what is... the ANC has stolen 1.5 to 2 trillion rand estimated roughly. Now allow that to sink in. The SOEs and what is happening in this country, 1.5 to 2 trillion and probably more even, has been stolen from the public fiscus. So, you know, there's a combination of reasons for the state of the working class and the socioeconomic crisis we're talking about. There we have a public sector strike looming again. Last year, they reneged on the last leg of a three-year public sector wage agreement they refused to, and unfortunately, Constitutional Court upheld the decision. There they back into another, with, you know, they started at a 10% wage increase, they down to 3% now. The ANC government has now pulled back the 3% that they offered. They thought, to hell with you, you're not moving, so they pulled back. So you got a public sector wage dispute on the cards, it's unstoppable, it's inevitable. You know, and so the ANC has failed even to treat public sector workers, those very people that it calls on for, to mobilize, to vote for it at election time, you know. And that's why COSATU and the public sector unions, in particular in COSATU, have had enough. They were in the forefront. The COSATU public sector workers are leading the renewed militancy of COSATU because they're feeling the pinch, you know, the nurses and, you know, hospital staff and many other public sector outlets, you know. The broad public sector, in fact, has been under attack, sustained attack by the ANC. But I think the reneging on the wage agreement last year was a point of departure. It has never been the same. They refer to it with such a sore heart. I mean, you know, they keep on talking about it, what the ANC government did to them when they refused to implement because of financial constraints. And in fact, I still believe as a seasoned trade unions that the Constitutional Court was wrong. They were completely wrong to uphold the decision of the ANC government to refuse to implement the third leg of that. And anyway, that is what the, you know. So I'm just saying, I think if you look at the so-called independent left, that is the left outside of the ANC alliance. What can you talk about really today? I've been there for 30, 40 years. It's nothing. There's not a member of parliament. They've never had a member of parliament since 1994. It's a shambles, man. It's, if truth be told, you know. And so when you talk of a left, as much as we talk about the Stalinist left, the ANC, SEC, COSATU, it is there. It is there where something could happen, you know, that could lead to either broader, well, certainly the SACP might be part of that, but a broader black working class movement, you know, and where it would end up maybe with a party, you know. And the left has to come to terms outside the ANC alliance and inside. That really, believe me when I say, the future of South Africa, you'll never have a non-parliamentary road to socialism if you're ever going to get socialism. It's there. It's there. It's done for a long time to come. Parliament and elections is done. And the left is too weak to ever chart a different course. Never. They'll never be able to, and they know it. You know, if the, you can imagine if a ZAPO and the PAC is nothing. Can you imagine what the other, and many of them, I must tell you, are led by so-called, the leadership I'm talking about, so-called minorities. It's a very important point to look at. I don't want to use this platform right now. I've written about it extensively. It is why the independent left has struggled to strike deep roots in the black, specifically African working class communities and labor movement. A lot of barriers, language, socio-cultural issues, lots of things, which historically has been a formidable obstacle facing the independent left outside of the ANC alliance. They've struggled to get into townships, to build roots there, to, yeah, it's just been.
Professor Harvey, my goodness gracious, I must thank you for this presentation. I share the disappointment, frustration, and anger of many, many people of watching what could have been a major historical change in the development of this world and progressive movements. So at this point, I thank you for your interview. Raj, thanks again for setting this up and animating it. Good to bring old comrades together again over long distances and long periods of time. And we'll follow this obviously very closely and be back to you maybe in the near future to follow up.
Okay, please. Thanks. It was nice talking and being here with you.
Cinema Politica Concordia is thrilled to invite you to the screening of Category Women. Join us on Monday, October 17th at 7 p.m. for the special screening of an award-winning film that works to expose the sports industrial complex, an industry controlled by men who put women's lives at risk. This film visits athletes around the world, including a profile on 18-year-old South African runner, Caster Semenya. This event will take place on Monday, October 17th, 7 p.m. at room H110 in Concordia's Hall Building, 1455 de Maisonneuve West. The venue is wheelchair accessible and donations are kindly encouraged. For info, cinemapolitica.org or find us on social media. This is a CKUT Radio co-presentation.
And that's all today for Ramandla. Thank you for listening. We'll be back again next week with another broadcast with news and analysis from the continent of Africa. And we encourage you to listen to Jazz Euphorium, which follows our show. So good night.
Directions on how to use your radio. Find the power button. Turn it to on. Turn the knob to CKUT 90.3 FM. Relax and enjoy.
Hello, Montreal. You're listening to CKT 90.3. And this is Easy Sonic Living. We have just a great show lined up for you. With the patriarchy.
Yeah.
We're going to use some weird vocal effects.
Yeah, and we're going to smash it.